Hey everybody, Donnie Gardner here with the Boston Terrier Society. In today's episode, we have Jeremy Cohen with us, and he's an attorney that solely practices pet law. So he helps pet owners in anything from dangerous dog lawsuits, pet custody disputes, wrongful pet injury and death, as well as counsel to pet-related businesses. Jeremy is the founder of the Boston Dog Lawyers, and his law firm became the first one of its kind in Massachusetts dedicated to pets and their owners. In the last 3 years, his staff has handled more than 1,500 calls from pet owners and pet professionals in need of counsel from around the country. His firm has been developing affiliates in other states as part of his long-term goal of becoming nationwide. He also accepts interns as well. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get right into the episode. All right, Jeremy, if you could just tell me a little bit about the Boston Dog Law Firm and what it's about.
So Boston Dog Lawyers, I started it in 2016, and it was a result of not particularly liking the law that I was doing, but also having an awareness of how dogs, and more in particular dog owners, are treated under the law.
Mm-hmm.
So well before I opened the firm, there was one of these cases touched close to home, and it was a German Shepherd named Jesse, and Jesse belonged to my stepkids and mostly lived at their dad's house, but I really loved Jesse, and one day I got a call that the town was holding a hearing because Jesse had bit somebody in the calf, and I called ahead, and they said, "You don't even have to come. Don't worry about it. His dog's going to be fine." I went anyway, and the place was packed with people, all against Jesse, who referred to him as an Al-Qaeda terrorist, pedophile priest, and this dog needs to be defended. And I realized we're going to lose Jesse, and they voted pretty quickly to euthanize him.
Oh, wow.
So that jump-started me to figure out how to save Jesse, how to file an appeal. At the same time, it was bringing my non-traditional family. We're all getting much closer now. I'm working with my stepkid's dad and stuff to save his dog. Mm-hmm. And we filed an appeal and we won, and it made the local papers. They were making cartoons and stuff like that. So because of the internet, every year I'd get a few calls, always wishing, I wish I did this full time. How much fun would that be? I mean, the cases, they're can be difficult cases, but still, to have my career be about dogs and pets,
right?
It took a while, but now we're 100% about pets.
And then, just for the listeners and everything, what were you doing before?
I worked for General Electric in their insurance division for a number of years, and then I was doing debt collection work.
Okay.
I went on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's happy in debt collection. The people you call, your clients are never happy, and even if they are, they don't really share it. I wasn't making
right.
a difference. I just wasn't making a difference, and I just felt this urge to do something more. And I'm just so fortunate the way things have lined up, especially because of the internet, to be able to make this take off.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. I've seen your Facebook following and everything. As far as like somebody that would benefit, you know, because I'd never heard of a dog attorney until I came across your Twitter account. When would somebody benefit from your service?
So initially it was to defend dogs who are accused of biting somebody or another dog. So that happens quite a bit. And
mm-hmm.
people don't know that you could hire an attorney to defend your dog if the town holds a hearing, or if somebody sues you for a dog bite, oftentimes people have homeowners insurance or renters insurance, but if they don't, they hire me to defend the lawsuit. So if somebody got bit by a dog, they got a
mm-hmm.
lawyer, they're suing you for $50,000 for the bite and for the scar.
Mm-hmm.
When I defend them, We really investigate these closely because dogs bite for a reason. And if we can show that this person, the victim, was teasing or tormenting or trespassed onto your property or had a prior history with the dog, those are things that can reduce your liability. And insurance companies
mm-hmm.
don't necessarily like to dig in like that. because it's hard to blame the victim. And there's certainly plenty of times we don't blame the victim, but dogs bite for a reason. And so we work to expose that.
Right.
How much you'd have to pay out. There's,
oh, go ahead.
Well, there's and then there's pet custody disputes, which I wasn't even aware of when I opened the firm in 16, but now it's probably probably half our calls, maybe 40% are pet custody disputes, where non-married people got a pet together, and now they're either roommates that the lease is over, or they were a couple and they're splitting up, and now who gets to keep the dog or the cat, and or can they work out a shared custody agreement? So those are the cases, probably the most volume where I do go to court, and we've had jury trials about custody cases, and we make arguments that are modern, but sometimes they fall on ears that are old.
Right. Yeah, I saw in one of your cases, it was a couple, and the judge, you said, was kind of condescending.
Yeah.
How do you handle that, and kind of what do you do in those situations? Because, I mean, I could see, you know, once again, from an outsider looking in, you know, you get called up for jury duty, you're getting, you know, $15 a day or whatnot, depending on the state you live in, and you're there to hear a dog case.
Yep, and I've seen that on people's faces, and I've seen it on judges' faces, but you know what? I'm here, and you got to deal with me. And sometimes I'll like mentally take a step back in the room, in the courtroom, and I see everybody's there, you know, if it's just our case in the courtroom, and I think all these people are here because I decided to take this serious and take my clients serious. And I do love that. And I know they might be annoyed, but I have to fight through that because this has to succeed. A firm like this has to keep going. That's why my name's not on the firm. It's Boston Dog Lawyers. That way, long beyond me, a law firm like this should exist. And it's baby steps. And when judges say condescending things to me, it's so difficult, right? Because you cannot talk back to a judge.
Right.
So one thing I do is I never forget. So that drives me for the next judge. And so when I am taken seriously, I really appreciate that judge. But that's what we paid our money for. If we paid a $200 filing fee, then you've got to take this case serious. And in the way to shut these judges down, and less and less are like that, and the way to shut condescending opposing counsel down is to win. And when you kick their butt with modern arguments, they think, oh, this is cute, he's got a nice little fun firm. No, this is war. And I treat my client's dog like it's my dog. You'll even hear me say, you know, we want our dog back. And I'll get stopped by the lawyer saying, it's not your dog, but it is in these cases. So I've hired weapons. I hire people that are smarter than me, lawyers and paralegals, to work the cases with me so we can go up against these bigger Boston law firms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a grind. It's a grind. We don't surrender. We might lose, but we don't surrender.
Yeah. How many, like, in this particular niche and industry, like, are you kind of like the only one in the U.S., or are there other attorneys that take on cases like these?
There's certainly attorneys who take on cases like these. I don't know that any have dedicated their entire firm to pets.
Mm-hmm.
There's lawyers, there's some great lawyers who are animal rights advocates and who will handle cases for pet owners. But I'm committed to the animal I represent has to be a pet. That's sort of like the charter. That way, if I get calls about elephants and whales and dolphins, there's some great lawyers, some great activists, and some great lobbyists who can work on those.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I had said how debt collection was so not fulfilling. When you get somebody back their dog, or you get them compensated because somebody harmed their dog, it's a great feeling. I mean, there's a lot of tears, but a lot of it is tears of happiness. And it's made being a lawyer fun and meaningful. And I didn't think I'd ever be able to say that about the practice of law for me.
I mean, that's great. As far as, because, you know, in the eyes of the law, in one of the articles I read of yours, so dogs are property. How do you deal with, like, emotional distress damages for dogs, like if somebody's been taunting their pet?
Right. So let's do it through an example. I had a case where Lily, a Westie, was left at a boarding facility, and her parents, her pet owners, went on vacation, and they got called to come back early. Turns out Lily ended up in the hospital for 8 nights, about $11,000 in medical bills, because somebody was cleaning her kennel cage, and she didn't want to come out, so they didn't take her out, even though she just weighed 23 pounds. They cleaned around her with chemicals, which burned her paws, so she licked her paws. The chemicals burned her tongue, half had to be removed, and burned her lungs. How she lived another 3 years is amazing, but in that instance, I mean, that's outrageous in itself that somebody didn't think enough to take her out when they're cleaning. But the response I got from the attorney for this particular boarding facility said, look, when Lily refused to come out of her cage, she consented to the consequences. So now I have a lawyer telling me that the dog can, a dog can consent. All right. So if a dog can consent, then it's more than property. And in court, we were able to keep a claim for emotional distress damages in. And the way to do it is if the person sees, visually sees the sort of negligent act or sees the harm, you can try to make a claim for emotional distress damages. You can't call it loss of, we don't call it loss of companionship. We just say emotional distress damages. And because my client's getting their $11,000 back, that doesn't help. That doesn't punish the police, first of all, so they change their behavior.
Right.
Second, what about the lost quality of life for my clients and for their dog? And so we make these arguments and we try to keep these claims in there instead of a judge dismissing them early on. And part of it is I do slip in some words where I'm kind of challenging the judge, like they could be part of something here. If they start seeing things a different way. And if they don't, and I don't expect them to, if they don't, I'm waiting for a case to appeal to the highest court here so we can try to change the law that way. So we win either way. We're going to get our clients a recovery, or most of my clients are willing to go to the state house to try to change the law and to roll the dice with their case to see if we can make change. In a case like this, we were able to get a little bit more than double the damages because the insurer figured out, we might get hit. We might get hit on an emotional distress claim in front of a jury, and that could be a big deal.
Right. As far as, like, so I'm just thinking of this, like, from a consumer standpoint, you know, if someone's messing with Bella, my Boston Terrier, in a situation like that, if she gets injured, would my insurance company help pay for that to hire an attorney like you, or is that kind of like out of pocket for the dog owner and then just try to get compensation from whoever, you know, injured my dog?
Well, the insurance industry is changing for pets, as you know. Now it's very unlikely that somebody has a dog under one or under two that does not have pet insurance for the dog's health or the cat's health. I haven't seen where those insurers will also pay for an attorney, but the thing about those types of cases are, because the yield, it's never going to be like a human case. So this dog Lily, you know, if that happened to a young kid, and that's major. She lost her taste buds and things like that. Major in terms of financial compensation. So on those cases, lawyers get a straight contingency fee, so they only get paid if they win. On these cases, because there's still a challenge and we're not sure if we're going to get paid, I take them on a blended fee. So you might, instead of paying the full hourly rate, you might pay 25% of the regular hourly rate and maybe 20% contingency. That way, you're invested in it. I'm at least covering costs, so I'm invested in it. I remain interested in, and then we we can see what happens in court. So I rarely won't take a case over finances. But I never take a case when somebody calls me right away and says, I have no money, you have to take this for free. If somebody's telling me to take it for free, it's just a lot different than if I make the decision to. And
right.
Because if not, I could be taking cases free all day. And my goal here is to keep this firm going as a business so that it can encourage other people around the country to get into this field. So pet owners around the country can have help and representation. And so I have to think of the business when people ask for me to work for free.
Right. Yeah, for sure. As far as like future goals and everything, you know, trying to get more people into this industry, as far as like attorneys taking on cases, kind of what's your goal with the firm and kind of future projects?
So that's what's so fun for me is because this hasn't been done before, I can be as creative as I want to be. And so my goal is this, to be better tomorrow than I am today. And as long as I'm doing that, I feel good about myself. I had originally thought, well, let's set a goal of 5 years to develop a nationwide network. Mm-hmm. But some people approached me about doing that, but it takes much longer than that. That's a 10 to 15 year goal. So if I had set that as a 5-year goal, I'd be doing all these good things, getting recognition, getting wins for clients, but I'd be disappointed because I would have missed that goal. So
right.
It's sort of like, be better tomorrow than I am today. And what that means is be a better lawyer, argue better, but also keep the awareness, keep doing more to make the awareness out there about my firm. And you look at how many calls come in. And as long as those numbers increase historically, I'm happy with that right now. I mean, that might change, but my goal was to, by the beginning of 19, to be all pets all the time. So we did hit that goal to get rid of any other type of case. And but other like non-business goals are, I want to speak more. I want to find ways to encourage law students to go into this field. So you have to show them a path, usually through internships, which we have interns here. And and then it's interesting to find other people have made a goal about my firm. For instance, there's some folks came down and followed me for a couple of days and did it to shoot a sizzle reel, which is sort of like a 2-minute version of look what this show could be for a reality show. And
yeah,
so I never thought that out. I never sought that out, but these folks sought me out. So that's just fun stuff. It's someone else's project, but I enjoyed that because I know it was never going to be like that when I was doing the other types of law.
Right. As far as like nationwide with attorneys and everything, are you able to take cases like say in California or any other state than Massachusetts?
So I myself am only licensed here, but what I am developing, it just like I said, it takes longer than I thought is having the ability to refer cases to other lawyers in other states. And there's probably maybe a dozen states right now. California is one of them, New York, Florida, Texas, where I can refer people who call in from those states to a lawyer there. And they might not do it full time, but they've certainly expressed an interest in trying to grow their practice more.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe about 20% of our calls come from outside of Massachusetts. And I really do what I can to try to make sure those people are well situated by the time I pass them along. I can't say no. It's just hard to say I can't help you and hang up.
Yeah, that is tough. As far as, so, you know, Boston Terrier Society, it's all about Boston Terriers. Like, is there any special cases that you've done with Bostons that you can think of?
I was going through my old inventory and... Now, Bostons, I've never had a Boston Terrier case where they bit somebody or another dog.
That's good to hear.
I'm sure it happens, but they probably don't make a big, it's not a
like
big
a German dog. Shepherd.
Right. Custody. So custody cases, I've seen one or two cases over Boston Terriers. And the other category we haven't talked about yet so much is is wrongful injury or wrongful pet death, wrongful pet injury or wrongful pet death, which that can be from a, well, from like the boarding facility not doing the right thing to a daycare facility that allowed your small dog to get in with a bigger dog. I've had a Boston Terrier case about a groomer that, you know, either harmed the dog, not intentionally, but harmed the dog, and then they don't want to pay the medical bills. So I see it more on the where these cases have nothing to do with the actual action of the Boston Terrier, of the dog himself or herself, but more of somebody in the pet world has injured the dog. And so it's about trying to get the medical bills paid, and then again to see if we can either get these wrongdoers to implement changes and policy changes, especially with some of the bigger pet stores around the country. They have grooming facilities within there, and and bad things can happen. Not a huge percentage, but I only see the bad stuff. But so a few things that I've learned, and especially for owners of Boston Terriers, dogs that size. So one thing is, do not use retractable leashes.
Okay.
When I drive up and down the street and I see people on a retractable leash, I want to stop the car and get out and explain to them why this is such a bad idea. And I used to do it with my golden retriever. I thought, this is great. She
can I used to have one for Bella.
And you don't anymore?
No, we used the Caesar Milan's. It's just essentially, so she stays real close.
That's the thing. It's not so much for your dog. It's so I mean, you want to keep her close. That way you can scoop her up if something's chasing.
And right.
It happens so often. We know too much about owners that let their dogs off leash in a place that you don't expect to see a dog off leash. And now if your dog's out on an 18-foot retractable, that's so many more seconds to try to reel your dog in or go get caught up to your dog to scoop her up.
Right.
Because of their size, you know, you don't want them battling with a lot of these dogs that get loose, so you feel like you have to save their lives. But if you have them on a leash, it just gives you more, you know, it allows you to act quicker by scooping them up. And I do like the freedom of a retractable, but that's just not realistic because the harm can be so much more.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we live in a townhome, so I kind of let Bella run free to go pee, at least. And I've run into some situations where other dogs, I mean, you only have to be worried about the other dogs. Bella's fine, but the other dogs.
So did you, how old is your dog?
She's 10 years old.
You've had her since puppy?
Yep, we bought her back in 2009. I think,
can she sit, stay? Does she follow commands well?
Yep. Yeah, she does great. She definitely listens to my wife more than she listens to me. But, yeah, I can let her run outside and she stays right by my side.
I've had friends who've had terriers, that Boston Terriers, that are, they can be a little stubborn.
Oh, very stubborn, yes.
Okay. But pretty smart dogs.
Yeah, she's great. So as far as, like, a new dog owner and just kind of trying to stay protected on the legal realm, is there any kind of advice that you'd give dog owners? And I mean, it could cover the gamut as far as like traveling, just dog behavioral issues that might need to be covered, or any other type of legality or ownership issues. I know that was kind of broad, but
no, but I mean, it's great if we can, if people can hear this and maybe just implement one of these changes. I mean, with Boston Terriers, you're not too worried that they're going to go and attack a person. But I think if you need to show, if that were to happen, you want to be able to show that you've put your dog into some type of position to succeed in training. And not just what you train your dog, but that you went to a facility or that you subscribe to a certain some certain trainer that maybe guided you by Skype or something, and you got to save this stuff, because if it ever came up that your dog bit somebody, well, you're not a good owner. You never even trained the dog. Well, if you can show that you spent all this money training the dog and all this time, maybe go to puppy kindergarten or, you know, socializing your dog early just seems to be the number one thing you should do. Mm-hmm. And you want to be able to show that you've done that. So you have to keep you have to keep receipts. And in the digital age, you can just scan them in and save them. Just like on these custody cases I have, so many people say, oh, I didn't save the receipts. I didn't save the adoption paperwork, or I didn't save the point of sale paperwork if you bought the dog. I didn't save it. It's only my name on it, but I can't prove that it was mine. Those things matter. You have to think about, although we think about dogs as being more important than cars, you have to think of it like a car. And if you have title to this car, you got to make sure you hold on to that title. And anything you pay to improve that car or improve the dog and make the dog better and buying him or her clothes and equipment, you want to keep a log of that because you know your relationship with the dog is never going to sour, but it could with the other person. And when that happens, it's all about proof. And it used to be it's just about who has the original document. But the arguments we make are, well, who's the better owner? And judges, for the most part, aren't supposed to weigh that. Mm-hmm. But we want to say, who was not only the financial manager of the dog, who paid for the dog and who pays for the dog, but who's the day-to-day manager? And you want to be able to say that it's you in terms of going to the vet, knowing what food the dog eats, walking the dog, setting up daycare. If it's one person more than the other, I mean, we don't like to think about the what ifs, but I have a lot of clients now that wish they did, because you got to be able to prove that this dog is yours. And in some instances, we do. If we can't, we try to do split custody, shared custody agreements. And judges will say, oh, I can't enforce that. But my feeling is, if these people got together and made the adult decision to take in this life, this dog, then they have an obligation for the rest of that dog's life to act like adults. And if that means that you have to meet to share this dog, then you have to do it.
Right. So I'm just thinking, so in custody battles, so even roommates, because one of the things you also sent me was that two roommates that were fighting over a dog, and so if they are able to prove that they bought dog food for him every month, that would be just one little tally in the favor of that person, I'm guessing?
Right.
As simple as that?
It's, I call it, it's called indicia, like indicators, indicia of ownership. Mm-hmm. So, and one thing that means nothing to me when I'm fighting a case is who got the dog licensed in the city or town. Because the reality is, if I had Bella's vaccination paperwork right now and could show that she's been vaccinated, I don't need her to go and register her in my town. So I could actually register your dog under my name in my town as long as I can prove that she's been vaccinated. So I don't put a lot into the licensing. Another problem that happens with people is one person works days and maybe one works nights or one goes to school. So it just so happens one person is free during the hours when the vet is open, when town hall is open. And so their name may be on it, but it's just because out of convenience they could do the errands. So financially, though, that still seems to be the number one way to prove ownership in courts more than the love for the animal. Now, New York is now looking at what's best for all concerned. So they're not saying that, they're acknowledging that they're going to consider in New York other things besides money and title, but they won't go as far as to say what's in the best interest of the dog. And that's where we want to get to in this country, but they will say what's in the best interest of all concerned. And that's nice and gray and nice and vague. And that's in the grayness and the vagueness, that's where lawyers can play. And so that just leaves it open to considering many other things. Like, have you owned, if this is your first Boston Terrier, well, you didn't own others, but your roommate was raised on Boston Terriers. So maybe your roommate would be a better owner because he or she has experience with these dogs as they age. We want a case based on that. So that's where you can really look into who has a fence a fenced-in yard. Who's the better experienced owner, or who works too much? If somebody works 60 hours a week, that can count against them, even though they were paying a lot of the bills, because they're not available for the dog. And that's why, I mean, I always encourage people to work these out on their own first before you pay for me.
And it's a holistic approach then, pretty much. Like, it's the whole...
Exactly. And it's tough to separate the spitefulness and the emotion from who really wants the dog. But, and it can be because, and it's because you just can't predict who you're going to see, what judge, what clerk. You don't know if they love dogs, hate them. You don't know if they got bit by a dog or if they think they're just not willing to take these serious. So you never know what you're getting when you put it in the hands of a third party.
Right. I guess I haven't asked this question. What kind of dog do you own? Do you have a dog? I'm assuming. I think I've seen pictures.
Yeah, I have a golden retriever. I have to have a dog doing this business. Anytime there's like a local newspaper or something doing a story, I have to have the dog there. They insist on it.
Right.
So, and she loves camera. And she really does. If you point a camera in her face, she knows exactly to freeze.
And, oh, that's funny.
So she's a little dog celebrity.
Yeah, how old is she?
Maisie is 6. Okay. And I do get, the thing about that is I'll get calls about this vet may have done something wrong to my dog. A lot of people, if they go to the vet and something happens to their dog, they, first inclination, we have to blame somebody because we're Americans and that's what
we
do.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, the vet gets blamed a lot. And rarely is it malpractice, but I got a call about the vet that I go to with Maisie, and thinking, I got to be able to go to my vet and not have them, you know, in an emergency and not have them be concerned that I'm, you know, with Boston dog lawyers. I don't think they know, but I certainly have to consider that if we're ever going to sue a vet, where can I bring my dog to? And that happened a couple of weeks ago. We had an emergency. And I was just so grateful that these people don't have my name on their wall with a big X through.
And then kind of, so my last question, this is more of a personal question. So as a kid, my mom, she used to breed dogs. We had Rottweilers, Bull Mastiffs, Dalmatians, pretty much every breed it seemed like. And one of her friends had told her to have a no trespassing sign versus beware of dog sign. Do those signs open you up to more liability than just not having them at all?
I know it's when I take on a case where they already had a beware of dog sign, what I do is so of course the other side says, yeah, your dog's dangerous. The owners knew the dog was dangerous and now they should have to pay more money. But I think that sign, beware is a verb. And I feel that means if you can read this sign and you're over the age of minority, 7, 8, if you can read that sign, then you better take some action. Just be on heightened awareness or know that if you open that gate, there might be a dog there. So beware, I say it requires the person who views it to do something. But I would much rather see a no trespass because nobody should be trespassing, but a lot of cases happen because somebody's ball went in the other person's yard, so they run in the yard not knowing the dog's there, and they get bit. Or they run onto the property to pet the dog, and they get bit. So I do like the no trespassing sign more than the beware of dog, because I just resent how people use that against you, the beware of dog.
Yeah. All right. So I got that.
One case we had like that was an 8-year-old boy. Dog was Midnight, and the 8-year-old boy was a neighbor. And one day he came over in front of the house, and Midnight was being walked by my client. And he said, "Can I pet your dog?" And before she could say anything, Midnight lunged at him and bit him on the forearm. And so when you hear that story, an 8-year-old boy shouldn't have to, on a beautiful Saturday, gets taken out by an ambulance to the hospital. We got to get rid of this dog. But when you start to investigate a little bit, we found out that this boy on his way to and from school would sometimes with a group of other kids would be throwing rocks through the chain link fence at the dog and taunting the dog.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to have evidence of that, and ultimately the dog was returned home and taken off death row, because you can't, and this is pretty similar in every state, you can't tease, torment, or trespass. So here, he may have even been trespassing by going on the property and throwing the rocks, but certainly teased and tormented. And then we just have a behaviorist that says, of course, dogs remember.
Right.
They can remember, and that's what incited the bite. So a long way of saying, dogs bite for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you said you raised Dalmatians?
Yeah, well, that was whenever I was growing up. But my mom, we had one Dalmatian, but she had actually bred Rottweilers, Rat Terriers. I'm trying to think of the other ones that we... A Yorkie.
Why Boston Terrier Society? What made you do that?
So, I mean, the biggest thing was whenever my wife and I mean, of course, this was 10 years ago, we're looking for a dog to get. There wasn't a lot of information, and there still really isn't a lot of information other than just, like, forums for Boston Terriers. And so the whole idea with the Boston Terrier Society is just kind of to tell our story about Bella, get other people involved, so that way whenever somebody's looking to buy a Boston Terrier for the first time, they have a resource to go to just to become better parents and make their decision on getting a Boston.
That's excellent. What a great way to use your time and energy and try to give people a heads up before they make a bad decision.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're making with Boston Terrier, you're making a 16-year commitment pretty much.
It's a nice long time too.
Mm-hmm. So as far as people being able to reach out to you, whether or not they have questions or maybe even an internship, what would be kind of the best route to get in contact with you?
Sure. So our phone number is 844-DOG-ATTY. So 844-DOG-ATTY, which is probably the easiest way to remember. But also Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Facebook page, Boston Dog Lawyers, and Twitter, which is how you and I found each other, at Boston Dog Lawyer. And I'm happy to take questions from around the country if I can help you. I certainly will, or at least leave people in a better place than when they first called, give them a little bit more information than when they first called. I think what you're doing is great, and big supporter of it. And I'm going to be following you guys.
All right, appreciate that. For watching today's show, be sure to subscribe to this channel. If you have any questions that you want to ask Jeremy, be sure to check the show notes below. I'll have all of his contact information there. And thanks for listening, and be looking out for more interviews to come in the future. Thanks, and have a great day.